Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm George Guntas. Many of you love The Daily Show for its incisive political commentary, but did you know that it's also a hotbed for soccer mania? I'm the lighting designer here at The Daily Show, and the only thing that I love more than making our set come to life is the beautiful game. I'm joined by Daily Show writer Joe Opio, a guy who loves soccer so much his loved ones once staged an intervention. The World Cup has been a top trending topic in the world not involving Kanye, and we wanted to quickly drop a bonus podcast episode dissecting all the best action from Qatar. The U.S. men's national team has made it through the group and have won over the entire nation. How do you think they've been doing so far?
Well, first of all, America, I've been impressed by America because when you think about it, America dominates the world in every human endeavor, you know, from commerce to gun violence, you know, politics to manufacturing Kardashians. So it's great that the best country ever no longer sucks balls at the world's biggest sport. I'm also happy to see that Americans have embraced the World Cup. The US-Iran game in particular was a roller coaster ride of emotions, you know. There was so much at stake. On one hand, America wanted to make it to the Sweet 16, as they call it here. But on the other hand, Iran wanted to knock out the Great Satan, you know, death to America. We watched that game, I remember, George, I think, at the office.
Absolutely.
And 95% of the Daily Show was tuned into the game. You rarely see Americans that invested in soccer unless it's a Ted Lasso episode. And so for me, that was very impressive. How far can America go? That's the question everyone is asking, because America is playing the Netherlands in the round of 16. I'll start with the good news. America has the kind of airtight defense that even I think Fort Knox would be proud of.
Only giving up one goal in the tournament so far.
Yes, and that's mostly thanks to their impressive young captain, Tyler Adams. You know, he has been a force to be reckoned with. He protects that back line like his life depends on it. So America, only one goal. And that one goal, I have to point out, was a penalty that was caused by Walker Zimmerman's, you know, brain fart. He shouldn't have tackled Gareth Bale when he did. Now, I'll get to the bad news. America can't score goals.
Correct.
They only scored 2 goals. They wouldn't buy a goal if, as a friend of mine put it, they wouldn't buy a goal if they had Oprah's credit card. They just scored 2 goals, and both have been down to Christian Pulisic, who is their star man. He played the sublime through ball to Timothy Weah for the goal against Wales. And then, you know, of course, he put his balls on the line when he scored against Iran. To be honest, I think the Dutch will be slight favorites coming to this. You know, it's not the best Dutch team we've seen at the World Cup, but they have a pretty strong spine. They have Virgil van Dijk in defense. They have Frankie de Jong in midfield. And then, of course, forward, they have the wonder kid, Cody Gapko, who has been scoring goals for fun. For me, the US's fate will depend on only one thing. Can the coach overcome his madness and pledge Urena? That's the only way I see the US making it through. Because right now, the US is struggling to create goals because it has only one creative outlet, and that's Christian Pulisic. Gio Reyna can fix America's dependency on Pulisic. I think he's America's gifted player by far in the history of America. I think it's a scandal that actually Gio Reyna hasn't played every second of every game.
I agree with you in that regard. But the question is, tactically, it seems that Berhalter has a good balance in the team. The pressing, well, obviously they're not scoring goals, but where do you fit in? Obviously, the lack of a number nine, it seems like the glaring spot to put Reyna in and maybe play him as a false nine. But who would you take off in the midfield to put Reyna if you play him in his more natural position?
No, for me, the way I see it, George, is that a coach's job is to integrate the best player into the team. And so for me, I think Greg has failed at that. I think some fans have been saying the fact that Gio Reyna is not playing is a suckable offense. I beg to differ. I think it's a lot more than that. I think it's an act of high treason. This is the best player America has ever produced. And I think, if anything, American soccer fans should be calling their senators and demanding congressional hearings into Greg's misuse of Reyna.
Yeah.
You know, forget Benghazi, forget the January 6th Capitol insurrection.
Yeah.
Reyna rotting on the bench is the televised crisis that the feds need to investigate.
Because
the thing is, if you have a player like this, if he was playing, he could have played for Argentina, he could have played for, because of his ancestry, he could have played for another team, and I think he would have been playing. But the fact that he is on the bench, for me, is something that Congress needs to get to the bottom of. And I know some people will say, oh, come on, Joe, you know, it's not that deep, it's just soccer. But for me, that would be a sign that Americans don't treat soccer seriously. Because, you know, in other countries, in serious countries, if a coach refused to play their best player, fans would be calling for the firing squad. Like, can you imagine if the Brazilian coach somehow failed to put Neymar on the pitch? Can you imagine if the Argentine coach refused to play Messi? He wouldn't be allowed back in the country. You know this. And if he was, you know, he would be frog matched in the street. So for me, it would be like the game of that. I feel like that's what should be happening to Greg Berhalter. It should be like that scene from the Game of Thrones, you know, just matching him through the streets, going like, shame, shame, shame. This is the best player. He should be on the pitch. Him not being on the pitch is not only robbing American fans of the special magic that's Gio Reyna, but it's also robbing America of the things he brings to the pitch.
That's fair. So who do you replace? Who do you pull out of the squad to play?
I think for me, I would play him as a false nine. That's what I would do. I'll play him as a false nine because he has the tools in his kit to actually thrive in that role. The thing is, you just have to find a place for him. Because also, unlike teams now know, if you focus on Christian Pulisic, then you nullify the United States men's national team. But what you need is you need an alternative. And Gio Reyna gives that alternative because he's able to carry the ball. He's able to dribble. If you're under pressure the way America was under pressure in the game against Iran, he's able to receive the ball, hold on to it, and act as relief for the defense.
I mean, for me, I was born in America and having followed the U.S. men's national team in previous World Cups, I think the biggest difference that you're seeing this year is how the majority of Americans are playing. For big clubs in Europe, for example, Christian Pulisic, Chelsea, Champions League winner, Gio Reyna, Borussia Dortmund, Weston McKennie, Juventus, Tyler Adams and Brendan Aaronson, Leeds, having gone through a relegation battle has been a big experience for them coming into the World Cup. Musa at Valencia, Turner's at Arsenal, top of the Premier League, Sergiño Dest previously at Barcelona, now at Milan. All these players now aren't afraid of this big stage. They play against these players week in, week out in their respective leagues at the top of Europe. And I feel like that's been the biggest difference to the team's past.
There was a time when I think the best American players would be playing at lowly clubs like Fulham. Well, that's where Gio Reyna's dad was playing. I think they were, you know,
Dempsey was also, I think, was there.
Dempsey was there. I think Landon Donovan was playing at Bayer Leverkusen. These players are playing in the Champions League week in, week out. And you can tell the difference that makes when they are playing at the, you know, in the, because they're not afraid of the world's biggest lights. The brightest lights, they don't shrink from the responsibility. And that's why I think for me, I've been such a huge advocate of Gio Reyna. If a player like him at his young age can force his way into a Borussia Dortmund team that's really brimming with talent, then he shouldn't be on the bench just so some player from MLS can take his place.
For sure. For sure. So now let's get into it. What are your predictions for the game? I want to score US versus the Dutch.
I think the Dutch are going to have a little bit more for the US. I think the Dutch are able to shut the defense down. They're able to shut the US out. And then you've seen Cody Gakpo. He scored 3 goals in 3 games. 23-year-old phenom from PSV. And he's going to be the biggest. I think he's going to be one of the most wanted signings after the World Cup. And I think he has what it takes to at least score a goal. And if the US, I think, goes one goal down, because we haven't seen the US tested from being goal down. They have led in all their games. And I think when you reach the knockout rounds, that character, the ability to bounce back from falling behind will be crucial. And unless you have another creative spark besides police, it's going to be very, very, very hard for the US to be in a position where they can bounce back if the Dutch score a goal.
I'm going to go 0-0, U.S. win on penalties. I think if they can play like they did against England,
yeah,
and just kind of keep it tight, keep it compact, take their chances when they can. They're young. They can press.
They're very energetic, yes. At that age, you don't get tired. But also, I feel like the England game almost proves my point, because they dominated England for long stretches in the second half.
For sure.
But they still lacked that decisive final ball.
And that's where Reina comes in.
Yes, that's where Reina comes in. Because Pulisic can't do it alone. Because every time he gets a ball, then all the opponents just swarm him. It's almost like the Bulls back in the 90s. If teams knew that the other players couldn't beat them, then they could focus on Michael Jordan. So what Michael Jordan needed was a Scottie Pippen. And I feel like Reina would be the Scottie Pippen to Pulisic's Michael Jordan.
Fair enough. Okay, so what have been your biggest takeaways from the World Cup so far?
Wow, where to begin? Because this has been a bonkers World Cup. You know, for a tournament where there's no alcohol, I could almost say this World Cup has been acting drunk. I haven't seen so many upsets, and I think you'll agree with me, since the 2002 World Cup. Germany staying home, all these big countries, you know, Saudi Arabia shocking Argentina, Japan shocking both Germany and Spain. But for me, the biggest takeaway, and I'm going to go back, sorry to go on about Gio Reyna, is how coaches are struggling to trust their most talented players. Because the US coach doesn't trust Gio Reyna, his most gifted player. The England coach doesn't trust Phil Foden, his most gifted player. Japan's coach has been like tremendous. He has outcoached both Luis Enrique and Hans Flick, but he still doesn't trust Takumi Minamino, who is their most gifted player. And for me, George, and you know this about me, we play soccer together, and I believe it's called the beautiful game for a reason.
Yeah.
You need these kinds of players who captivate the imagination. Football isn't a beautiful game when Gio Reyna and Phil Foden are on the bench. And so for me, the teams should be built around these kinds of players, because when you look at the World Cup, the funny thing about the World Cup is the defenses at the World Cup are so disciplined and well-drilled that you can try to pass your way through two banks of four, but it's going to be hard. What you need are players who can carry the ball and penetrate and force the defense into some kind of imbalance. And that's where all these players come in, because they can carry the ball. So you play defense and you play striker when we play our pickup games, and I play defense. And I think we both all agree, every defender's biggest nightmare is having an attacker running at you.
Of course.
Because you're backpedaling, but then you can't see where you're going. And so for me, actually, England should even be more ashamed of itself than the US, because Foden starts every game, almost every game for Man City. And yet, when it comes to the national team, we've seen Gareth Southgate prefer Mason Mount to him.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting. Southgate does have his favorites in that regard. And I think that if England is going to go far, they need to, you know, he needs to get out of those habits. And otherwise, he'll end up like he did at the Euros or at the previous World Cup.
And then the thing is, I feel like this is an English problem. Yeah. What they're doing with Foden, because England has always treated gifted players with, you know, the same kind of suspicion, say that the TSA reserves for a brown man carrying a Quran. When you look back at all England squads from the 90s, you know, Matt Letizia, Steve McManaman, Joe Cole, they don't trust these kinds of players. They think these players have poor work rates. Steve McManaman was idolized at Real Madrid.
Absolutely.
Yet he was struggling to get into the English team. Because what English players and English coaches unfortunately want are players who rush into 50-50 challenges or who run around like headless chicken. So when you say a player like Mason Mount, he's an energizer bunny. He will run around for 90 minutes. But then when it comes to technique, he'll give you zero. But when it comes to relentless cardio, he'll give you that for 90 minutes. And We've seen this, George. We follow football. We've seen the way the English game treated Mesut Ozil. He was idolized in Spain, and then when he went to England, he was dismissed as lazy. And for me, that's why I've been telling my friends, I think Jamal Musiala, who was playing for Germany, I think he dodged a bullet by choosing Germany over England. Because if he had chosen England, I'm sure he would be on the bench and Jordan Henderson would be starting ahead of him. So for me, I think the coaches are very conservative and they need to trust. And that's the difference between, let's say, a coach. And I think we differ because you support Real Madrid and I support Barcelona. And for me, this is the difference between a coach like Pep Guardiola and a coach like Jose Mourinho. Because Pep Guardiola trusts these kinds of players to go on the pitch and make a difference. He doesn't prefer runners to technically gifted players.
Fair enough. My biggest takeaway, I think, has been being that this is the first time that the World Cup has fallen mid-club season.
Yes.
Agreeing with your point about the conservatism of the coaches, I mean, they're almost trying to rotate in the first games where they haven't put themselves into position to go through yet. For example, Spain heavily rotating their squad in the final game against Japan.
Yeah.
And now
paying
And paying the price. Well, do they pay the price? Because
was it calculated? Yes, you're right.
Was it calculated? Second place in the group puts them opposite side of the bracket of Argentina and Brazil. That's another discussion to be had.
And they also get to face Morocco instead of Croatia.
For sure, for sure.
16, yes.
For sure. So again, it could turn out better in the end for them in that regard. But even Portugal today rotated heavily. France obviously also rotated heavily. And the other thing that you're seeing is the amount of injuries, the amount of great players that aren't in the tournament due to playing 3 days a week since August.
I think this is the first World Cup where the two best players in the world
aren't there.
Technically, that's Karim Benzema and Sadio Mane. So it's like, but the thing, I'll say this about Spain and I'll say this about Portugal, the teams which you said rotated, and I'll say this about France. Their coaches trust their technically gifted players. So a player like Pedri and Gavi, if they were playing for England, they would be on the bench. A player like Yao Felix and maybe even to an extent Bernardo Silva would be on the bench, but they start for Portugal and they start for Spain. And you can see the difference they bring in the game. They're beautiful, lovely players to watch.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back after this. What do you think has been the most magical moment at the World Cup so far?
I think I'm a bit biased. And you know what I'm going to say. I think Messi's goal for me against Mexico really took the breath away. If you're watching it as a non-football fan in that way, you would think that goal was ordinary. But then Messi, of course, has like, that's what Messi does. You know, he makes the extraordinary look routine. And from when I watched that goal, it was very clinical in its precision and breathtaking in its execution. Because Messi had been smothered the whole game, right? The Mexicans had been on top of him. And he knew when he received that ball from Di Maria, he knew he would never get that much space again. And so he needed two touches, basically, control and bang. And the pass from Di Maria was good, but it wasn't great because the ball was bubbling all over the place. You know, it was bubbling all over the place. And we play soccer, both of us, and we both know there's nothing harder to control than a ball on the bounce. And so that's what, for me, made Messi's first touch for that goal magic. Because if that first touch was any lighter, that means we wouldn't have had enough space to create sufficient momentum to strike the ball. But then if that touch was heavier, he would have been smothered by the battalion of onrushing Mexican defenders. So he had to make sure that that touch was perfection, the first touch. And then to make matters worse, remember, he had to score from that distance against Memo Ochoa, of all people. And we both know, like, Ochoa is, like, when it comes to the World Cup is like this, like, special serum that gives Ochoa superpowers. And so for me, the fact that Messi could score from that distance against such a keeper and against such a defense, which had smothered him all game long, and he had just taken two touches to do that, for me, that was the magic moment that took my breath away. I could also say it's fitting that the pass came from Di Maria, because he's the only player on the Argentina team who I think is on the same wavelength as Messi. Because you watch the game, and I don't know whether you remember, there was a moment when Messi tried to play a 1-2 with Marcos Acuna, and Acuna was totally bamboozled. He basically looked at Messi like Messi had invented fire. So Di Maria is the only player who is on the same wavelength, and that shows. I think the other magic moment, if you ask me, would be Richarlison's goal in the opening game. Yes, that was pure magic. I thought personally, as a soccer player, I thought the first touch was terrible.
Of course.
The ball went higher than he wanted.
And then behind him,
Yeah, but then, you know, you have to give him 10 out of 10 for improvisation.
Yeah.
Because another player would have failed to adjust to the situation. But it was a great goal. It should be framed. Yeah. It should be in the roof. That's what I think. Yeah. It should be, you know, just crop out the abysmal touch and just frame that goal and frame the goal and hang it in the roof. And I think for me, actually, those two goals, Messi's and Richarlison's, proved why a magnetic first touch is the most important tool in soccer. Because get it right, like Messi did, and you'll score in the blink of an eye. But then get it wrong, like Richarlison did, and then you need to become a contortionist, basically,
right,
for you to be able to score. So for me, those two moments, those were two magical moments. There was an almost magical moment, but it didn't happen. And it was when Inaki Williams...
Yeah, almost took the ball off the keeper off.
Yes, that almost became a
that would have been that would have been like best ever.
Yes, if he hadn't just slipped at the wrong time, that would have been, I think, the most hilarious goal in the history of the World Cup. Yeah. So for me, those two and that Inaki Williams almost, those were the magical moments at this World Cup.
Yeah, agreed about the both. I think technically Richarlison's goal was better after the bad
more
first
pleasing
touch.
To the eye.
Yeah,
more
but
to the eye.
The thing about Messi's goal is he's done that a lot of times in his career, so I don't think it's as special technically, but what was magic about that was like the weight of the country coming off
the
shoulders.
The context of the game,
That was what really was like, and then you saw how much it meant to him as he celebrated and ran to the corner. It was fantastic. So what do you think we can look forward to in the knockout rounds of the World Cup?
The knockout rounds are going to be very tight because, as you've seen, this World Cup has had so many upsets. I feel like it could almost go the way 2002 went. You remember with South Korea making that deep run into the tournament. But I still think the heavyweights are favored. Brazil, I think, for me, the favorites to win this World Cup. They are a solid team. They have a deep bench. But without Neymar, who has been injured, I think they lack imagination. Don't get me wrong. They can't turn to Vinicius Jr. And I think Vinicius Jr. has shown us all through the Champions League that he has broad enough shoulders to carry a team. But I think carrying Brazil to the World Cup is such a massive responsibility to place on such young shoulders. Argentina should at least make the semifinal because I think they have a bit of an easy path.
If
they should be able to make quick work of Australia. And then that means they could face the winner between the Netherlands and the USA. And the good thing about Argentina, I think the thing that favors them, ironically enough, is their opening day loss against Saudi Arabia helped take the pressure off. Because remember, they came into the World Cup on a 36-match unbeaten run.
Correct.
And if you bring that into the World Cup, at some point it can become a curse. Because you start playing every game like it's a final. So they were able to lose to Saudi Arabia and then they were able to reset. So now the thing is, I've watched Lionel Scaloni and you can see his tactics. He's growing into the World Cup. And that's what I think Argentina did in the Copa America as well. So they are in good stead. He has adjusted tactically. Portugal, of course, you can never count out Ronaldo. And he has a great supporting cast for once. He has only scored one goal, and then Portugal has had six different scorers this World Cup, which means goals can come from anywhere on the pitch. The only weakness for Portugal for me is their coach is almost like Gareth Southgate of England. He can tend to get too conservative at times. You know, he should unleash the weapons that he has. I think Rafael Leao should be coming off the bench as quickly as possible. But I think that conservatism might actually turn out to be a problem for them. When you look at France, they're missing. France, I think, for me, is one of the most gifted teams, pound for pound, because they're missing Benzema, they're missing Pogba, they're missing Kante, they're missing Christopher Nkunku, but they're still, when you look at their roster, they're still talented enough. They're also missing Presnel Kimpembe, but some people will say that's a blessing in disguise. So I think France are looking good. But do they have the ability, with all the injuries they have faced, to to last the distance? That's the question. Spain have Gavi and Pedri, exciting duo. I love watching them play. Enrique, their coach, Luis Enrique, loves a false nine. But I think Alvaro Morata's form is making him rethink that. I think they also look good, but Busquets in that role, we've seen him at Barcelona exposed every time he's pressed hard. And so we just have to wait and see how that will pan out. England, if England trust Phil Foden a lot more, and then if they can get Harry Kane firing, because remember, he hasn't scored a single goal this World Cup. He was the top scorer last World Cup, hasn't found the net this World Cup. So if they can trust Phil Foden a bit more and get Harry Kane firing, I think England will also make a deep run. They could make the semifinals.
Hey, Joe, I'm going to stop you right there. We got to take a quick break for ads. We'll be right back after this. What do you think will be the biggest upset in the round, in the knockout rounds?
I think if the games this evening, if Serbia make it through, they will face Portugal. And Serbia have the ability to shock Portugal because they won, I think, their game in the qualifying rounds. And they have a good enough team that they can pose questions to every other team. But the big issue here is if you're at a World Cup, you hate playing a team from the same confederation because they are very familiar with your style and they have the ability to spring shock. So for me, I think it will be Serbia if they make it through, or Switzerland, because they're teams that are familiar with Portugal's game. For me, that's where I see the shock coming. I don't see any shock in the other games.
My shock of the knockout rounds, I think, is Morocco is going to beat Spain.
Really?
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I don't like Rodri as a center back. I think Rodri should be playing in the Busquets role.
He hasn't put a foot wrong, though, so far. Maybe he hasn't been tested yet.
But he hasn't been tested.
Yeah. Okay.
So Rodri should be playing in the Busquets role. I think that he should be playing Laporte. I think he should be playing Laporte and Torres as the center backs.
Okay. I think Torres is a bit fragile. And yeah, of course, you know, Eric Garcia is an unstarter.
Yeah, exactly, for sure.
Yeah,
but it's the same flaws of a Barcelona team last year before they had Lewandowski, right?
Okay.
They had Pedri and Gavi. They had Busquets. They don't have a number nine. They play with a false nine. You got Torres on the front side. Where's Ansu Fati, by the way?
Yeah, he hasn't been trusted because I think he should be. Look, Dani Olmo has been playing well. And I think he deserves his place on the team. But I think Ansu Fati should at least be coming on. But remember, he's also struggling because he just came off the knee
surgery. He's not playing well in Spain.
Yeah, he lacks match fitness. He hasn't played long enough because he's just coming off an injury. But I'll tell you one thing, though. There's no chance Luis Enrique is putting Sergio Busquets on the bench. I think Sergio Busquets is the first name on the team sheet. That's how much Luis Enrique loves him.
But that's the same stubbornness of Gareth Southgate with Mason Mount and not playing Foden. And I think ultimately that's what's going to cost him. And I think that you are correct to say that when they play with a number nine and have, you know, the ability to not just go sideways and back and have the ability to put a cross in the box and someone get on the end of it, that's where they seem the most dangerous. So let's see. I think that Morocco can stay organized and hit them on the counter. It could be like Morocco, any week in La Liga that you saw last year.
Morocco has another coach who is trusting his most gifted player. Hakim, look at what Ziyech is doing.
Yeah.
He has been a game changer in every match that Morocco have played.
Sure.
And the old coach, the coach who was fired, Vahid Halhodzic, basically messed up by not trusting him because Hakim Ziyech didn't go to the Nations Cup because he fell out with him. And for me, I believe that if you're a coach, like you have one role and one role only, it's to make your best players shine. You can't afford to put your ego before. And for me, the Moroccan coach has been a revelation in that regard, in that he has managed to somehow extract from Hakim Ziyech something that the old coach, who was European, by the way, wasn't able to extract.
Mm, for sure, for sure. Now, as you were saying, I think we can separate teams in the knockout rounds into like three groups, right? There's Brazil and France, who are obviously the clear
the top
favorites.
Contenders, yeah.
Right. And then there's kind of that second tier. You're looking at Spain, England, Portugal, Argentina, and then the others,
yes.
Right? So what does your brain tell you that the final is going to be, and what does your heart want the final to be?
First of all, I'll be in Qatar for both the quarterfinals and the semifinals.
Yeah.
And for me, my dream matchups barring any upsets, and this is going to upset American fans, USA, USA. These are my dream matchups. I would want Argentina to face the Netherlands. I think that would be an exciting game. Portugal, I think, is going to face Spain. England, I think, will face France. And then Brazil is going to play Croatia. And then the semifinals, I think, will have Argentina-Brazil, a repeat of that Copa final. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to have Portugal-France on the other side, which means, inshallah, soccer fans can finally get a Cristiano Ronaldo-Messi final. I think it will be the greatest event in the history of the World Cup. Like, remember the picture of them? The Louis Vuitton picture, the Louis Vuitton
playing chess, yeah. It's become the biggest memes on the internet, yeah.
Yes, playing. Can you imagine if that came to life? It would be like a dream come true for every football fan. But then, you know, the football gods, you know, they never want to make. But that would be a dream come true, just like Messi and Ronaldo in the biggest game in the world.
Yeah, agreed. That would be what my heart would want. I'd want to see one of them win the World Cup. And then I think if that were to happen and one of those teams were to win the World Cup, I think that they would retire. I think Ronaldo most certainly would.
Okay, so that's what your heart says. What does your brain say?
My brain say, based on how the brackets lay out, is I think France-Brazil. Because on the opposite side, because outside the brackets, the two top teams.
Okay, yes.
I think that France can get by England. I think Spain's going to get upset. I think it's going to be France-Portugal in the semis.
Okay.
And I think France gets through. But, you know.
But I'll tell you this. I'll still settle for that. That's not a bad final by any stretch of the imagination. France versus Brazil. That would be a repeat of 1998.
Correct.
And it will be, again, as a football fan, I would love to watch that. I wouldn't. Messi versus Ronaldo is a great personal battle because of all the subplots and the history and the drama surrounding them, the two best players in their generation. But France versus Brazil also has lots of intrigue, and I wouldn't mind watching that.
Oh, for sure. And again, if you were to say, the other team that I would say has the potential to upset somebody, though I don't think it's going to happen, is Japan, because they've shown that they can absorb pressure and knock. They could have 20% of the ball in a game, get dominated, and just in 5 minutes
sucker punch you.
So it's like, again, even though they're likely, if they were to get past Croatia, get Brazil, they're the one team that's set up in kind of a Mourinho style way to kind of just like, yeah, have the ball, pass it sideways or backwards. You know what? When you make a mistake, we're going to punish you.
Look, I'll be frank with you. If you can beat Germany and Spain, because that was supposed to be the group of death.
Correct.
And Japan had absolutely no right emerging from that group. And they didn't just emerge from the group, they topped it. So they have earned the respect that they have. But I'll say this about Japan. Their coach, and again, I'm sorry for hopping on and on about this, is in the same mold as Greg Berhalter, is in the same mode as Gareth Southgate, because he doesn't start Minamino, and then he also doesn't start Mitoma, who plays for Brighton. Every time Mitoma has come on, because of his pace and his dribbling and his ability to control the ball in small spaces, he has changed the game for Japan. He's the player who actually got that ball off the line for Japan to make it through. The controversial, was the ball over or not? He's the player who made that play. And every time they brought him on when they were behind against Germany, and they turned it around 2-0, from 1-0 to 2-1. They brought him again yesterday against Spain. They were 1-0 down, and he again changed the game. And every time he has been repaid with a place on the bench. I think he should be starting every game. I don't know whether the coach prefers to bring him on when the other team has tiring legs, but I think he should be starting every game, because then you start the game in a forward position with your foot on the neck of the opponent, as opposed to always chasing the game from behind. Actually, I feel if Croatia can beat Japan, which is within the realms of possibility, then Croatia could also spring a surprise, because they have the players who have the experience and the know-how to put together a deep run. You know, players like Perisic have been there and done that. Players like Modric have been there and done that. I feel like if they can grow into the tournament, because remember, they were finalists at the last World Cup. So if they can grow into the World Cup, Brozovic, they have like probably one of the most technically gifted midfields in the entire World Cup. So I feel like if Croatia make it past Japan, then they could be the dark horses who could make life very, very difficult for every team they run into. The only problem is they have to run into Brazil in the quarterfinals.
Agreed. I think that you're spot on to say that Croatia does have the talent and the experience of, with the players that you mentioned. I think that...
You have questions.
The question I have is, how can they cope with the pace of Vinicius, the pace of Richarlison?
That's why I say they're unfortunate that they're running into Brazil so early.
Right. So again, that I think that Japan is more suited to upset Brazil than Croatia based on the fact that they're a little more youthful and have a little more energy. They've kind of proven that, you know, absorb the pressure, have the ball, because Brazil wants to also hit you quickly on the counter, Rafinha, you know, and I feel like, my head's telling me that Japan or Croatia won't beat Brazil, but I think that Japan might be better suited too.
I think speaking of Japan, I think we haven't given the Asian teams enough credit, because this has been an absolutely blinding World Cup for them. From Saudi Arabia upsetting Argentina. Now you have South Korea and Japan making it into the later rounds. It's been a great World Cup for Africa as well. Senegal and Morocco are in there, and Cameroon stand a chance to also make it. Ghana almost should have made it, but they ran into, well, Uruguay and Suarez. But I think like this has been, for a World Cup held on their continent, this has been an absolutely fantastic World Cup for teams from the Asian Confederation.
I totally agreed. I know we've been fixed on all of the X's and O's on the pitch, but what has been your favorite storyline off the pitch?
There are many great candidates. Off the pitch, and I think the first one that comes to mind is the Japanese fans. Everyone loves them. You know, they clean up after themselves. They do this actually every World Cup, but it never ceases to amaze. That's how mind-blowing it is. We can't believe that soccer fans, because soccer fans are not the most ordinary group, and Japanese fans always do this. And so for me, I always love them for that. Of course, Saudi Arabian players beating Argentina and each of them getting a Rolls Royce. That was a great story.
For sure.
So, because they lost, they didn't make it out of the group, but they really won. If I go to the World Cup and come back with a Rolls Royce, I think I've won. But for me, if you ask me the great story off the pitch, it has to be Qatar as a country for me. It has to be the Qatar World Cup. And I know some people will say, oh no, Joe, Qatar is a controversial choice and all that. And Qatar has received lots of flack for everything. And I think they deserved every bit of the criticism. But it also didn't help that the national team stank the whole joint up. Because if you're hosting the World Cup, you hope that your national team at least wins a game.
Yeah, for sure.
Qatar became the first host to lose the opening game. And then they proceeded to lose all three games. But for all their criticism, I think Qatar has delivered in an area most people wouldn't expect. And that's because Qatar has never been mistaken for a hotbed of feminism, right?
Right.
In fact, there are many critics who have said that this World Cup is the most anti-women World Cup because women in Qatar don't have their full rights. But on the pitch, I feel this is the most pro-woman World Cup because it's the first World Cup that has had female referees.
That is true.
For me, that's something that stood out because in the past, George, men's World Cups have always been notorious sausage fests. Men on the pitch, men officiating, men in the stands. But this World Cup, yes, I think it was just yesterday, Stéphane Frappart became the first woman to referee a men's World Cup game when she took over the game between Germany and Costa Rica. And what made it even better was that match was overseen by an all-woman team because she was joined by assistants from Brazil and Chile. And for me, the optics of that is pretty powerful because you have 22 testosterone-driven alpha males, right? Submitting to the authority of a woman. And the thing that Qatar did, which made this not just historic but symbolic, is Qatar, to their credit, they let the women referees officiate the games without putting upon them any cultural restrictions. Because Qatar could have gone like, no, you know what? We need them to put on scarves or hijabs because they are women and Qatar women need to wear this. But Qatar went like, no, these are women referees. Let them referee the game the way they would referee it in Europe. And so to see these women work and to see men actually submitting to the authority of a woman because she has a whistle at the world football's grandest stage. For me, that was one small step almost for female referees, but one giant leap for women in Qatar and women in the Middle East and women all over the world.
Oh, for sure.
Is there something that stood out for you off the pitch?
Off the pitch, yeah, I would say, yeah, the feel-good story would be definitely be the Japanese, not only the fans, but apparently like the players also cleaned the dressing room and left like origami cranes in like a, I don't know if you saw
those. Dressing room, yeah,
in the dressing room. That was cool. I think I'm the kind of person, obviously a lot of things like these events like Olympics or World Cups tend to always have a geopolitical tone to them. And I understand that, and that's fair. I try to kind of avoid all that and be focused on the football. And I think that you try
to separate the art from the artist.
Agreed. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I'm and try to see the games for just the sporting elements of it. So again, I understand all of the controversy, but and all the things, and again, all the things that you said about the women referees, fantastic. But yeah, I think my favorite off the pitch story has to be the Japanese.
I think my last word would be to American fans. I think if you're an American fan, you're pretty excited about the 2026 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
You have a young core players who are 20, 21, 22 at most.
For sure.
And they're going to be nearing their peak in 4 years.
Yeah.
They're going to have had experience from playing at the top clubs in Europe. And this is the World Cup you're going to be hosting. I believe that 2026 is going to be a far, far, far cry from 1994.
Absolutely.
1994, America came in. They had no soccer heritage. They didn't even have a league, a functioning league back then. And you had players like Alexis Lalas being the main cogs in the national team. So I think if I'm an American player, I wouldn't be so down if we lost against the Netherlands. I wouldn't be so down if we didn't make a deep run in this World Cup. Because this World Cup for me, for America in particular, and remember, America, by the way, is the only country that made it out from their confederation. Mexico out, Canada out. So for me, if I were an American fan, I would be proud of that. And I would be proud to know that this World Cup is almost like a great curtain raiser. It's almost like a great appetizer for 2026.
For sure.
Because these players are going to be a totally different proposition when they're hosting at home and you have American fans on their back and they're urging them on and the players have grown 4 years. You imagine Tyler Adams in 4 years. So for me, if I were an American fan, extremely excited for the future and just hoping that when 2026 comes, all our players will be in full health. And then I think then,
they can
America
make a deep run.
Really, really make a deep run in the World Cup.
For sure. I've got a few more questions for you, Joe. Kind of quick fire. Who has been the most exciting player for you at the World Cup so far?
Most exciting player, without a doubt, Jamal Musiala. It's a tight one between Jamal Musiala and Cody Gakpo. But the way Jamal Musiala plays in really tight spaces, his frame looks slight, but he's very, very, very hard to push off the ball. He has incredible balance. And I think the only thing missing from his game, I would give him 9 out of 10. And the only reason I won't give him 10 out of 10 is because he lacks goals.
For sure.
He lacks the final product. And remember Vinicius Jr., his first season at Real Madrid.
For sure.
Great player, but he just couldn't convert. And then he added that to his repertoire of skills. And look what happened. Real Madrid won the Champions League. So I think Jamal Musiala is still missing that. But for me, he has been the most exciting player at the World Cup.
I agree with you on Musiala. I think the other player that has been exciting to me for a different reason is Jude Bellingham. I think that it's kind of been a shop window type, tournament for him, where I think that he's going to demand a lot of money to leave Dortmund the next year or so. Probably
added a few millions to his price tag.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yes,
for sure. Okay.
And I feel like now that you say that, when between Musiala, Jude Bellingham, Gavi, Pedri, and Ansu Fati, I think the world, because all football or soccer fans are dreading the moment when Ronaldo and Messi hang up their boots, because they were the first players to really come up during the social media age. But I feel like when you look at the young crop coming up, the players I've mentioned, players like Gakpo, players like Tchouaméni, who might not be as glamorous as the players I've mentioned. I think
Valverde.
Yeah, Valverde. I think the game is in pretty good hands.
Oh, absolutely.
The game is in good hands, yes.
Absolutely. Okay, in a hypothetical semifinal, Brazil versus Argentina. Argentina is awarded a penalty. Who takes it?
I wouldn't give it to Messi.
You would not give it to Messi.
No, I wouldn't give it to Messi. The pressure of the occasion and the pressure that Messi as a person has. Plus, he doesn't have a great record with penalties in defining moments. I wouldn't give it to Messi. I would give it. Of course, Messi will step up because the occasion is like Superman. When the occasion demands it, you can't shy away from your responsibility. But I wouldn't give it to Messi. I would give it to another player. I would give it to Lautaro if he's on the pitch. I would give it to Julian Alvarez because they don't carry as much pressure.
Yeah, agreed. I think he can't take the penalty. Did you know?
Yeah, no, not any more penalties. Messi is also a player who contributes a lot more. Even with missing the penalty in their last game, he still was the best player on the pitch by a mile. So I would take that kind of pressure and responsibility away from him. But I don't think Messi will allow a green. He's not like Ronaldo. Ronaldo, when the pressure is on, he always converts. Messi will convert a 30-yard screamer. But then put him 12 yards away from the keeper, biggest game. I think I wouldn't give him the penalty. I'll give it to someone else.
Of all the records Lionel Messi holds, he has missed the most penalties of any player in the 21st century.
Missed the most penalties at the World Cup as well.
No. In general, penalties, club, country. Yeah.
Yes, no, but I mean, even when it comes to tournaments, missed the most penalties in the Champions League. It's just his one flaw. It's almost like, you know, when people talk about Shaquille O'Neal and they go like, sorry, he just couldn't shoot free throws.
Right.
It's almost like every player has a chink in their armor. Every player has an Achilles heel. And I think Messi's his penalties. He has converted many penalties. Don't get me wrong. But he has missed so many crucial penalties. And I feel like every time he steps up in a big moment, all the doubts seep back into his mind. And it's just like almost PTSD. You start remembering all the penalties you missed. And then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy that you're going to miss the next one. So for me, I would go like Messi, no more penalty duties for you. You give us a lot more on the pitch anyway. Let someone else handle that particular. It's like Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons can't shoot a three, but he gives you a lot more defensively. So let him focus on the defensive side of the game. I would keep the penalty duties away from Messi.
Okay, fair enough. And I agree with you, by the way. So Kylian Mbappe.
And consequently, if Brazil got a penalty, I'll tell Neymar to stay. I'll take out a restraining order against Neymar.
No Neymar penalties.
Yeah, I would, because he's also a bit spotty when it comes to penalties. So in the hypothetical scenario of either Brazil or Argentina getting a penalty, take out a restraining order against Messi and Neymar stepping up.
Okay, who takes
if
it for Brazil?
If it's Portugal, even if Ronaldo is injured and is in hospital, bring him in a wheelchair. He'll convert it.
Yeah, for sure. Who takes it for Brazil in that situation, if not Neymar?
I would give it to almost Casemiro.
Yeah.
He's a man.
Ice in the veins. Agreed. And done that.
He's won multiple champions. He knows everything about pressure. I would give it to Casemiro.
Yeah. So here we are right now, currently in the golden boot standings, Kylian Mbappe, Marcus Rashford, Cody Gakpo, of the players who are still in the tournament, are at the top of the golden boot standings with 3 goals, slightly behind Bruno Fernandes, Alvaro Morata, Messi, Ferran Torres at 2. Who do you see winning the golden boot?
I think Kylian Mbappe.
Kylian Mbappe.
Great head start. And also when it comes to the knockout rounds, it becomes harder to score multiple goals because the defenses are that much better. The defenses are that much more disciplined.
Compact.
So these are going to be tight games. But I think Mbappe has done enough. It's sad that Harry Kane has registered no goals so far. And when you look at the players who are vying, who are in the running, I don't think Messi is going to score many. He might score, maybe he might start pad against Australia. But I don't see him scoring more goals as the tournament goes on. I don't see Marcus Rashford is not even a starter for England.
Right.
So he probably won't score many goals going forward. Cody Gakpo has scored in each and every game, but I think he's also still a bit too young. And I think his game is going to get sussed out as he meets better, more well-drilled opponents.
They're not going to make a deep enough run for it to matter, whereas some of these players on the deeper running teams will have the opportunity, more opportunity to
score
put
more
back
goals.
In it. Yeah.
So for me, Mbappe, without a doubt.
Okay, fair enough. I think that we've touched on most of the questions, and I have one last question for you, Joe Opio.
Okay, now you're making me tense.
Other than watch Barcelona playing the Europa League on Thursdays, what will you do when the World Cup is over with your time?
Come on, that's a low blow. What will I do? Look, I'll just, you know what I'll do? I'll just watch reruns of Messi games. If fans of The Office can watch reruns of The Office on Netflix, then I shouldn't be judged for going back and enjoying the magic that's Messi. You know, YouTube has most of his clips. So for me, yeah, no, that's what I'll be doing. And guess what would happen? Because I'm watching Messi, reruns of Messi's best games, I'm going to watch Messi dunk on your team.
Yeah.
Day in, day out. Because Messi has incredible magical moments against Real Madrid. So I'll just put Messi clips on a loop. That's what I will do.
Nice. And then finally, just to say it one more time, who is your pick to win the World Cup?
My heart says Argentina for obvious reasons. Because I think, and I know this can be controversial, I think football owes Messi a World Cup. He has given us so much joy over the years. We need to return that joy by giving him the greatest and biggest trophy that we can. But my brain says Brazil, even France. But I wish Messi could do it, but I don't think the footballing gods are going to grant us that wish. But my heart wishes Messi could do it. It should be a great swan song. It would be a great way for him to ride off into the sunset. But I think Brazil and France,
yeah,
we'll be happy to spoil the party.
Agreed. And one last thing, if you didn't notice, Joe, because you did mention during the podcast that we do play together sometimes. And it might be the first year post-COVID that we do the industry tournament. I'm sporting our daily show kits.
we made the deep run, but we...
This has been a Daily Show recap of the World Cup. I'm George Guntas.
And I'm Joe Opio.
See you next time. For more on the World Cup, listen to Joe Opio's full conversation with Grant Wall at dailyshow.com/beyond.
Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.